You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
You've added properties, hired a manager, maybe even formed a JV, but are you really building a business? In this episode, we break down the difference between scaling a real estate portfolio and scaling an actual company. What systems, mindset shifts, and blind spots separate the serious investor from the overwhelmed landlord? Tune in to hear where real estate and entrepreneurship overlap and where they don't.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fans, I have exciting news to share with you. Our monthly in-person networking events are back. If you're in the Montreal area, and even if you're not, go ahead and grab a ticket for our next event at equitybuildersclub.com/events. I would love to see you out.
Hey, real estate fan. So I was called to have this episode happen just because as I'm going through coaching some of my students in the Equity Builders Club coaching, I realize that there's a distinction or a delineation that we need to make between what it's like to grow a business and what it's like to scale a real estate portfolio. Because while some of those skills are complementary and some of the processes that you need to learn and implement are going to overlap at a certain point, there are ways in which perhaps they won't, or ways in which that if you're a real estate geek like I am, some of those business lessons might take a long time to learn, might be hard to come by, and might be creating bottlenecks for you without you necessarily even knowing or understanding that that's what's going on. So I want to kind of parse this apart and talk about what happens when the growing of the portfolio has become kind of the easy part, right? Because at a certain point, once you've figured out getting access to deal flow, you figured out the financing aspect, and perhaps you've got capital partners, or you've got capital to invest yourself. And what really begins to scare you or create a bottleneck is the operations side of things. Because you start thinking like, if I had one more property into this mess, I feel like I'm profitable. But what happens if I all of a sudden have 8 units to rent at the same time? Or what happens if plumbing blows up in 3 locations? Am I going to have the staff and the time and the systems in place that are going to be able to handle that? And so like, if you're not able to have the operations side of your real estate empire under control, eventually that's going to be what begins to create a bottleneck for your growth. So what are some of the ways in which you can set that up? And what are some of the mindset shifts that you need to go through that make sure that you are set up to be able to scale your portfolio to as many units as you can acquire, get under contract, and finance? And so I think the first thing that we maybe don't realize as we begin to grow is that there are kind of 2 business models that people build on top of. And one of them will end up being like almost the full delegation model. And so typically people who like really hate property management or who are working in locations that are away from where they live will tend to go this particular route, which is to try to form, you know, as much of a delegation team as possible, and then to have that be what takes care of the properties. And so nothing wrong with this system. Actually, when I invest in a submarket, this is kind of what I've done in investing in the submarket in terms of trusting and finding a property manager in that market who can deal with some of that stuff for me. But there are going to be particular things to watch out for or blockages if you choose to work on that like delegation only model. And then the other option is to really build a team, because at a certain point, what you might do when you have 10 properties is not going to be what's going to work when you have 40. And at that point, being able to do it alone gets increasingly more difficult. And you get to the point where you begin to have to build a team. And then once you build a team, well, that now looks like you're running a business. And so in a sense, the first fork in the decision tree is to decide what kind of a investor and a landlord you want to be. Do you want to be the one who eventually owns a business that takes care of managing that real estate? Or do you want to try and subcontract out absolutely just about everything and have that be how you build your investment portfolio? So let's begin by talking about really the delegation model. And let's look at some of the things that you need to get under control and then some of the potential weaknesses of that model, just so that you're aware of it if this ends up being the course of action that you want to pursue. So the first thing is that in one sense, it is a bit easier to scale because a lot of that operation stuff, so whether it's answering the plumbing calls or even doing some of the rent collection, if you have a property manager doing that for you, it's going to take a whole lot of work off your plate. Now, where this can be maybe not as great is that you are, in exchange for that, giving up a bit of direct control, and you are losing as a result of that some of the oversight. And, you know, I've mentioned in previous episodes that, like, if you really, there's one relationship that you really need to manage and have it be extremely high trust, is that's relationship with your property manager, because if they're the one who's really there on the day to day and you're not seeing your building all that often, that ends up being a particular position where, you know, you can take a lot of hits if that person is not 100% trustworthy or doing things in the way that you would want to have them done. Also, this model is going to be necessary if you're not local, because eventually when you're trying to scale a portfolio that's away from your home location, like if you are not there, it's going to be really, really difficult for you to build a team on the ground and then have that really report to you in the way that you would conventionally build a business. So, you know, those are some of the things that you might want to consider if you're doing that delegating out situation. Now, what does not happen is if you're doing this delegating out, is that does not remove from you the burden of having to do some of the bookkeeping, the record keeping, and also the tax burdens. So depending on the size of your portfolio, eventually you're going to have to develop some of the same good habits as far as filing all of your different pieces of information and your receipts, and then understanding some of that so that you're able to go through and present that when tax season comes, although that burden will be smaller. And then depending on how your property manager handles things, perhaps they're also just submitting to you at the end of the year an expense report and a rent report that you are then filing along with your taxes. So that can even, you know, if you're delegating everything out, that can even take some of the tax, you know, the tax reporting and the administrative burden off you, in addition to taking away some of the work. But now the vulnerabilities of this also, I think, are worthwhile noting. And for this, I'll tell you a little story about, you know, what happened to me the first time that I delegated out to a property manager. So I did do my job of vetting in the submarket that I invest in. And when I went there, you know, I met a couple of property managers and, you know, chatted with them, picked the one that I thought seemed like the best person for the job. And then it turned out that they were dishonest and disorganized, and it like really went south. And then where I ended up having problems was that person had my keys, they had a lot of my lease documents. And when they, you know, I had to fire them is what ended up happening. And then really, I didn't have the documents, I didn't have the keys. And it ended up being really very difficult to transition the building over to somebody else. And, you know, anecdotally, one of the things that happened is that property manager cashed some rents and then didn't report to me that they were cashed. And they ended up also following up with tenants who had already paid and kind of putting them into a non-payment cycle because their own record keeping was so poor. And so if you can just imagine, this is somebody who I think, to give the benefit of the doubt, was perhaps more disorganized than dishonest. But if you have somebody dishonest occupying that property manager seat, like, it can really, really almost take you out and create huge problems, you know, going forward. So you have to be very, very sure that person is a good person, and then have as much oversight as you possibly can into what they're doing. And, you know, in previous episodes, I've also talked about carving out a kind of a hybrid model, which is now what I do when I hire external property managers, is that basically they work on a data platform that I control. They work on my electronic documents so that if ever something happens, I still have all of my data and it's saved on my systems, and I can just kind of lock them out of it and then transition over to someone else, because I learned my lesson from the first time when my property manager not only controlled the buildings, but also controlled the data. And that was ended up being like a real big headache when I had to transition away from them, because I didn't even have, for example, the tenant's phone numbers. So, you know, just something to watch out for if ever this is going to be the course of action that you seek to adopt. Now, the other aspect of this delegating out that I have experienced as a problem is the controlling of cost situation, because you have to understand that property management is a fairly low margin business. And so the property manager, you will have the types of property managers who also have a construction team. And this might help them control the costs, but can you really be sure, you know, whether or not they're incurring those costs to create work for their construction guys, or whether they're actually doing it because it's necessary? So, you know, that becomes a trust issue if the property manager has in-house construction people. If they don't, the other pattern is that, you know, property managers, they're making a relatively low margin. So nobody's getting rich managing properties. And so the way in which they handle this is to take on a whole bunch of business and then hope that things don't all blow up at the same time. I know, I'm a property manager, I've lived through this myself. And so I know that what ends up happening then is that the squeakiest wheel gets the grease. And you as a property manager have a tendency to just pick up the phone and call the plumber. And so that means that you're perhaps sending expensive people to job sites to do work without necessarily going there yourself or understanding the problem or trying to minimize the costs to your clients. And so the other weakness of this complete delegation model is that sometimes you as the landlord or the property owner can end up really paying a whole lot more for stuff because the property manager's incentive is to just get that work off of their desk and get it handled, so to have the tenants stop calling them. But whether the problem stays fixed or what the final price tag is, the property manager is not getting compensated on that. And so your incentives are kind of not aligned because obviously you as the owner want to pay for the right solution, the cheapest solution, and the solution that's going to make the problem stay fixed. Whereas the property manager very often just wants to have people stop calling them and bothering them and get on to getting their next contract. So that's a potential weakness of that model, is that you can end up overpaying for stuff because your incentives are not necessarily aligned with the property manager who's taking care of things. Now, if you do end up choosing to build your own team, you are going to find yourself with a lot of the problems that business owners find themselves with. And so this is a different set of problems than really real estate investors typically encounter at the beginning of their careers, because it's issues that are administrative and HR related. So we'll get into what some of those are a little bit later on, but let's just talk about the advantages of building yourself that team and some of the disadvantages of it. So one of the big advantages is cost saving. And so, you know, as I mentioned previously, you might be able to pay less for your property management because you're not paying a monthly fee to a property manager. You're basically paying your staff and then hopefully have some systems that take care of stuff. And you also get to have more control of what's going on, because since it's your staff and you're really more involved in the day-to-day and some of the troubleshooting or solving or whatever it is, you end up having more control of what's going on with your assets. And in my experience, you know, that has led to me being able to optimize my buildings to a greater degree and be more involved. Although in a sense, the upside is also the downside, because then you are, you know, forced to be a little bit more involved, and you are going to be forced to learn some of those lessons that business owners have to learn faster than if you are just delegating everything out. And whether that goes from administrative lessons to HR lessons to really systems and operations lessons that entrepreneurs and owners of businesses have to learn, be prepared that those things are going to end up being the bottleneck on your ability to grow if you end up opting for the build a team solution. So the other thing is that will then limit you essentially also to specific locations. And if you are looking at a portfolio that's like spread over a whole bunch of different locations, this thing of building a team with boots on the ground is perhaps not the ideal solution for you. Although the economy of scale, if you are hyper-local, probably you are going to be able to save on costs and also just get some efficiencies because you're able to kind of almost vertically integrate and control whatever's going on with your investments all the way down from the janitor to all the way up to what's going on with, you know, the accounting and the property management system. So, you know, what are some of the things that you need to get right? And whether or not you're delegating out or building a team, these are kind of the things that if you're looking at setting up those systems in the same way you would set up business systems, you want to be able to focus on and control. So obviously rentals, then you're going to have the whole maintenance and construction and like tenants calling you to get various repairs done. You're going to have the accounting aspect, and then you're also going to have the software and electronic filing aspect. And in a sense, whether or not you choose to delegate out, those are going to be kind of the main things that you're going to need to control as somebody who begins to scale a real estate business. And so let's just talk for a minute about being somebody who delegates out. In that sense, you might consider delegating your rentals to a real estate broker, or perhaps you have a property manager who is taking care of that for you. Then the same thing with, you know, construction. Accounting is and electronic filing are kind of like the orphans of this, right? And so even if you have a property manager, perhaps you are going to have to work on your accounting skills anyways, or else figure out how to set up a proper bookkeeping system so that someone else can work in it, or hire a bookkeeper who's going to maintain your records so that when it comes down to either doing your rent increases or filing your taxes for your buildings, like that's eventually going to be something where, like, you know, I often deal with students and clients who come in with, are still working with shoeboxes. And definitely if they're adding another 20 units to whatever they're doing, it's going to become unwieldy and impossible. So now let's say that you opt to go the route of building your own team, or building like a grouping of different people that you're going to delegate out to. So perhaps a property manager or rental agent, perhaps some construction subcontractors, whatever it is, you are going to then find yourself with the same problems that entrepreneurs do, and find yourself in that position to be building a business. And so what are some of the ways that you can save time, and some of those things that you really need to have your eyes on as far as structuring a real estate business that's going to allow you to scale the number of units that you can take on? And, you know, I will say the SOPs, or the standard operating procedures, are just so important and also major time savers. And if you are looking at hiring someone external, having that SOP, and you can do that, you know, with a Loom, or you can do it, you know, even in ChatGPT, by having something composed and then going through those different steps of really, what does it take for you to go through a rental process successfully? And whether that's at the top of the thing, you know, doing professional photos, writing the ad, posting the ad, tracking the visibility of the ad. Like, there is a whole process to whatever thing it is that you're doing in your business that you can map out either with a Loom, with a checklist, or with something that, even if you are hiring that real estate broker and you want to give this task to them, perhaps you want to see what their SOP looks like. And then, you know, perhaps you can also steal it, right? So like, that becomes one of the key things that if you are hiring people or onboarding people or having them come into your organization and do work for you, understanding what that process looks like in the form of an SOP can be also really important. And, you know, I'm also thinking of tenants when they move in. Like, you can even send a tenant a checklist like that when they're coming in and out of your unit to make sure that they are doing everything. And so those SOP type structures are really things that are there designed to save time, and also to make sure that things happen in kind of a standard way so that you're not dealing with things that are all over the place. Now, let's talk about some delegation blockers. And whether you're looking to hire a property manager, or whether you're looking to build a team of employees or subcontractors who do work for you, everybody who wants to scale eventually faces some of the demons of delegation. And as I go through these, you're going to be able to see if one of them resonates with you, particularly at where you are in your journey. And I will say, so one of the first things that when people are aware that they have a delegation problem is perfectionism. And like, all of these delegation demons really just come down to fear when you get behind them. And so if you think of the perfectionism, right, like there are people who have extremely high standards and want things to be done just so. And if you give in to this, you will be trapped by the fact that you have to be doing everything on your own. And like, really, ultimately, if you think about the things that perhaps you're good at and that you should be doing, like for myself, I should not be doing bookkeeping. There was a time in my organization when I was the one who did that, but like, I am really not very good at it. And that's not something that I should be doing in a larger organization. Nobody would ever hire me to be their bookkeeper. And so in a sense, when I get a little bit bigger, like, why should I be doing my own bookkeeping? Perhaps I want things to be done in a very specific way, but ultimately that would be giving in to perfectionism if I feel like I need to do it. One of the other issues then, and this is a bit tied to perfectionism, but it is a little bit different, is just that control aspect. And so I think that sometimes, like, with that trust situation where perhaps you're afraid to, like, you know, give up your passwords or to give access to your documents or to, like, let somebody into, give them the keys in a sense to your business life, whether it's in terms of giving them access to your accounting files or giving them the logins of various accounts of yours, you cannot delegate without giving up a little bit of control. And so if this is the particular demon that plagues you, realize that there is a whole lot of fear tied up with this. And yeah, of course, there's fraud. And yeah, of course, business people, once you get to a certain size of organization, there's a certain amount of theft and fraud that's just part of the game. But if, for example, think of, you know, Bill Gates running Microsoft, if he was so afraid of that, he could never have scaled his business to the size that it is. And that eventually, if you want to grow beyond a certain size, you need to get over that fear and obviously put in place various checks and balances. And if you want to know what those are, then talk to people who have set up those bigger accounting systems with the checks and balances, where either they're still signing checks or signing off on some kind of digital platform in order to pay bills and do various things like that. But you kind of have no choice but to give up a bit of that control and face that aspect of the delegation demon. And then the last one, and this I have to admit is the one that perhaps I've suffered from the most, is the fear around spending money to get something taken care of. And I get it. As entrepreneurs and real estate investors, our income and sometimes our cash flow is not always super stable. And so it's not always easy to make those decisions of what you're willing and able to pay to subcontract something out. But here again, the degree to which you're able to save your own time by paying someone else to take things off your plate, eventually your time is going to be a bottleneck on how big you're able to get. And so to be able to get over that fear, make a budget, decide to hire. And here I want to refer you to a great book that I'm just in the process of reading called Buy Back Your Time. If ever you guys are looking for a great resource on this topic, I encourage you to go out and grab the book. It's really super interesting. But the main subject of that book, the main theme, has to do with the fact that, like, whatever your buyback rate is. So let's say my hourly rate is $100. If I can get something off my plate for $25 an hour, if I don't absolutely love doing it, I should just go ahead and subcontract that stuff out right away. Because what I'm doing is I'm buying back my own time to be able to use it in a way that's going to make my business grow exponentially, right? By a factor of four. And so if you think about a way of addressing that fear, the fear that goes along with hiring staff, that is a good way to think of it. It's just that your hours as the person who's doing the investing, whether it's finding deals, identifying joint venture partners, making strategic decisions, doing real estate education, the time that you have to invest in those activities is going to pay a much bigger dividend than, for example, in doing concierge work or even low-level bookkeeping. And so considering paying to have that done is going to be a strategic good business decision going forward. And if I can just offer you one final word of advice on this, I have tried all sorts of things in my property management company and in my real estate practice. And one of the first hiring mistakes that I made was to try to hire a secretary. And so I had this, like, you know, basically when I needed somebody to be doing a little bit of bookkeeping, a little bit of rental visits, a little bit of sales, a little bit of customer service, a little bit of instructing the handyman of what to go and do. The problem was that actually, while they would have some of those skills, they would never have all of those skills. And what ends up happening is that even if you end up with a bunch of gig workers, so even if you end up hiring someone to do 10 hours of accounting, and someone else to do just your rentals, and someone else to just do your handyman stuff. In my experience, it has been better to hire for those skills and have different people doing different jobs than to try to hire one person to span all of those different skills. Because, you know, just very quickly, somebody who likes to be in an office in front of a screen doing data entry for accounting stuff is probably not going to be the one who's going to be doing sales, who's probably not going to be the one running around with a screwdriver. And so to just understand what some of those personality types are and what types of skills are typically bundled together is going to really help you make intelligent hiring decisions. And then ultimately to really think about the skills and the personality type that you're hiring for, to make sure that you don't try to push too many part-time jobs into one job and then have someone who excels at half of what they're doing and not all of it. If I could give you some advice in terms of how to hire subcontractors or to build a team, that would be my advice. So, real estate investor, thanks for listening to this. If you have found some of these insights valuable, please do go ahead and share this episode with one other person who you think could profit from it. And if you are in and around Montreal, I will issue a special invite to our next Equity Builders Club meeting, in-person meeting on May 20th, which has exactly this theme, which is how to scale your real estate holdings through sound entrepreneurship practices, and also understanding the fact that in Quebec, there are certain ways that work to scale from that mom and pop level to a professional investor. So if you're interested in learning more about that, please don't hesitate to grab a ticket for our next Equity Builders Club event. You can find that on our website at equitybuildersclub.com in the events section. And I should mention that we're also having a giveaway on this theme about scaling and growing your portfolio in an intelligent way. So stay tuned for the information about that giveaway, either on Instagram or through our social media. Have a great afternoon, real estate fan.
The second exciting thing is that we still have a few more coaching spots available in our next cohort. If you would like to have a little bit more help closing on that next property, please go ahead and fill out the contact form on equitybuildersclub.com, and we would be happy to jump on a call and explain to you a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.